The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents.
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live. Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host. Normal's outreach coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers, tokettes, and normalizers throughout this great land of ours. It is Thursday, January 13th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. Podcast as the Normal Daily Audio Stash on iTunes and on demand at stash.normal.org. Then stick with us for another hour of live Toker Talk Radio right here at Normal Show Live on Stick M. Joining me here in the studio is our engineer, co-host, and co-producer, Ganja John.
What's up, Russ? How you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic today, although I got some very disturbing news about my planning for the future. We'll save it for hour two, but I just got to tell you, it's disturbing. It's shaking me to the core, man.
See, I told you I'd forget about it. I actually did forget about it.
I'm shaking to the core. We'll get to that in hour two, though. And also joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, the lovely and talented Cannabis Carrie. Oh, if I call her once. I did it again, John. I didn't call Carrie.
Damn it, Russ.
Well, we've got a great show coming up for today. On today's show, we're kind of having a Canadian bent on the show in that we have Dr. John Anderson joining us in our Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment. He is a former correctional officer and currently the chair of criminology at Vancouver Island University in British Columbia. We'll be talking all about the massive increase in the Canadian drug war over the past couple of years. In the Radical Rant, I'm going to take an in-depth look at Washington's Senate Bill 5073 and House Bill 1100. That seek to improve the Washington State Medical Marijuana Program. And in our Daily Toker Tunes today is Groovin' Thursday. We've got some music from John Doe Radio here bringing us Chewy with some French Inhale. But before we get to all of that, we've got to do our hemp headlines with Cannabis Carrie, who now joins us via Skype. Sorry, I forgot to dial, Carrie.
That's okay. Today we have quite a few interesting stories. We have one from the Supreme Court justices that I can't wait to talk about. Also a story out of Montana, some new legislation, and a story about another raid in Michigan. So we'll talk about all of those on the hemp headlines today.
All right. Great stuff coming up for you. And again, stay with us for hour two, Toker Talk Radio. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. You can get in on the conversation. This is the voice of the marijuana nation, and we want to get as many voices in involved as possible. Thanks for tuning in. We're back with your hemp headlines right after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. I know you like to pretend it does, and there's a lot of misinformation about that. But finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn. You find one, you will make a big story because it doesn't exist. Finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn.
Narwhal Show Live, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
I'm gonna light me a pipe of aspiration. I'm gonna blow away some of my hair. I'm gonna leave this plastic place to your plastic evil race. And travel to a better place. And travel to a better place. And travel to a better place instead.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Narwhal News with Cannabis Carrie.
Starting the hemp headlines today, I wanted to start with just a short note in the face of our story yesterday about the man defending his marijuana garden against thieves and shooting one of them as they fled, resulting in the thief's death. That man that took the shot, a medical marijuana patient from California, was convicted of manslaughter. Now, in a case here in Oregon, a medical marijuana patient that was defending his medical marijuana grow against two trespassers in his backyard shot at the two but missed. He was sentenced to 10 days in jail. A deputy district attorney in the case says the man's use of a firearm was not legal because his life was not at risk. So it seems that defending your marijuana grow with a gun might get you into more trouble than your marijuana crop is worth.
Absolutely. You know, nobody deserves to die over marijuana. And, you know, I know it's going to pain some people for me to say this, but even those who are trying to steal the marijuana do not deserve to die over the marijuana. If your life is at risk, if they are coming with weapons and a home invasion robbery threatening you, that's a whole different story. But if they're hopping the fence in the backyard trying to rip off your plants, no, you shouldn't be shooting at them. You should be turning on the lights. You should be calling the cops, yelling, whatever it takes. But not shooting at them. Nobody deserves to die over marijuana.
In Oakland, Michigan, county sheriff deputies raided an Oak Park magazine dispensary and hydroponic shop run by a local entrepreneur and medical marijuana patient yesterday. Rick Ferris, who runs the complex which houses the Michigan Medical Marijuana Magazine office, a nonprofit compassionate club, and a hydroponic grow shop, told the Detroit Free Press that after the raid, the authorities did not make any arrests during the raid because no one inside the complex was breaking the law. In Wednesday's raid, though, officers did seize money, about $20,000 in cash. Officers conducted the raid wearing bulletproof vests, and one wore a ski mask when they entered the complex. They also gathered receipts from the offices and wallets of about 10 employees and patients that were there at the time of the raid. Deputies presented a search warrant, and the sheriff's office will get 80% of the money seized under state drug forfeiture laws. The rest will go to the Oakland County Prosecutor's Office. Oakland was the same place that marijuana raids last August sparked outrage among the medical marijuana patient community. Dozens of arrests were made in those raids, and their cases are still ongoing. Forfeiture laws in Michigan have become a contentious issue because various agencies there have come to rely on seizures to supplement their shrinking budgets. Defending the August raids of dispensaries, Oakland County Prosecutor Jessica Cooper argued that medical marijuana dispensaries in the state are illegal since the Michigan Michigan Marijuana Act of 2008 does not mention any such businesses, and because marijuana is still federally illegal. Rick Ferris, the owner and founder of the complex that was raided on Wednesday, says that marijuana saved his life after a construction accident. He said it helped him get off Vicodin and Xanax and helped him lose 250 pounds. He said that he will use every penny he has to make sure the law in Michigan stays for the people that need it. His business employs 17 people, makes most of the money off of the growing equipment sales, and he says he supplies free marijuana to roughly one-third of the Compassion Club patients as a result of caregivers who donate excess product. While the Oakland County Sheriff's Office has yet to address the raid, some are speculating that the matter could be related to the recent DEA subpoena for patient records. The federal government filed a court request that is related to the arrest made back in August that asks for medical marijuana patients' confidential records with a subpoena for information. The DEA had requested the information from the Department of Community Health that oversees the program, but they refused. Federal prosecutors have asked a judge to enforce the subpoena, and a hearing on that issue is scheduled for February 1st.
Well, first of all, while the Michigan Marijuana Act doesn't explicitly mention dispensaries, it doesn't explicitly forbid them either. This is another one of those situations where we get caught up in what's a collective and what's a caregiver and how many people can you be a caregiver for. But regardless of all of that, let's look at this from the point of view of the police officers here. They just made $16,000 and didn't go have to go through all the trouble of arresting people and showing up to testify and going to a trial and building a case and submitting evidence and doing the proper follow-ups, right? What better situation could the cops ask for? 16 grand just for walking in on a place where people are, you know, minding their own business, being legal, and they seize 20,000 in cash and they get to keep 80,000 of that. That is exactly what these civil asset forfeiture laws are all about, policing for profit. It's no better than when the old stories of the mobsters who would go up to the storekeepers and shoot rack them up for protection money. It's the same basic idea here, and it's disgusting. And furthermore, when they conduct these raids in a place where they know it's just medical marijuana, they know it's just patients involved there, do they really need to go to the extent of wearing the body armor and the ski masks and coming in with the automatic weapons as if they're suddenly going to be subject to some sort of assault or some sort of trap being set by the medical marijuana providers? Please give me a break. If you suspect that some business is operating outside the law, you're not bursting in as if it's going to be, you know, a gunfight, a battle. I'm sure if there's some tavern out there that is suspected of maybe selling to an underage kid, they don't burst in the middle of business hours with guns drawn and a whole bunch of body armored cops to take the place down. I'm sure if we're talking about a pharmacy that may have illegally diverted some pharmaceuticals, they don't treat it like a SWAT raid. It's time that medical marijuana got a little bit more respect, and we need to, once again, I keep saying it, just legalize for everyone and we can solve all of these problems.
A senator in Montana has introduced a new bill to license and regulate the growing and selling of medical marijuana in the state and to impose a 10% tax on growers' sales to pay for the cost of the regulation. Senator Dave Lewis, a Republican from Helena, is the sponsor of Senate Bill 154, the second bill to impose some regulations on the industry. The other bill is House Bill 68 by Representative Diane Sands, a Democrat from Missoula, and Representative Gary McLaren, a Republican from Victor, on behalf of the legislature's Children's, Families, Health, and Human Services Interim Committee. That bill, introduced earlier this month, also seeks to regulate marijuana, and it sets up guidelines for and standards for physicians and patients, unlike the Lewis bill that does not address physicians at all. On Wednesday, Lewis introduced his bill and said that he wanted to put together a licensing process that would allow the state to know how much medical marijuana is grown and where it is going. It would be regulated by the revenue department, much like bars, taverns, and casinos. Under SB 154, growers would have to file quarterly reports with the state revenue department, which would be allowed to inspect growers' premises and records. The state agency would be allowed to determine whether the number of plants and amount of usable marijuana the grower is authorized to process reconciles with what the grower reported to the department. With a 10% tax, Senator Lewis says that the 4,700 growers in the state would bring in about $4 million annually. Part of that money would go to the revenue department to pay for the cost of the regulating. The other money would go to local governments based on the number of licensed growers in each city, town, or county, and then the rest would go to the State Department of Public Health and Human Services to be spent on social services listed in the bill. Also in the bill, procedures for local governments to have public hearings before anyone is granted a license to grow medical marijuana or to move a growing location. Medical marijuana advocates are undecided whether they support the Lewis bill just yet, but Tom Daubert, a lobbyist for Patients and Families United, says that the bill is a fair, conscientious, and thoughtful proposal and called the bill the most rigorous bill in development regarding the growing and dispensing of medical cannabis. Many in the Montana medical marijuana businesses say they don't like the proposed 10% tax, pointing out that no other medicine is taxed in the state of Montana. Now, some lawmakers, such as Representative Shockley, House Speakers Mike Milborn, and Representative Keith Reiger, all are seeking to repeal the Medical Marijuana Act altogether.
Yeah, and in comparison to that, this bill for regulations has got to be better than, you know, getting rid of the medical marijuana law altogether. And I haven't actually seen SB 154, so I can't comment on all the particulars of it. But if Tom Daubert from Patients and Families United is thinking it's fair and reasonable, then that gives me a good feeling inside for sure. I do have that same objection that the other Montanans have about the 10% tax, you know, a tax on medicine. But once again, this is a situation that arises because there is no income coming in from legal marijuana in Montana. Legalize it for everyone. Tax the hell out of those of us who are using it recreationally, but don't tax the cancer patient, the glaucoma patient. I mean, these guys have enough medical bills as it is than to be, you know, burdened with another tax. That seems a bit ridiculous to me. And in general, just speaking about trying to improve medical marijuana laws, specifically with respect to dispensaries and the retail operations that are cropping up in these states, even where they don't have these regulations. This will be the subject of my radical rant today with respect to the state of Washington. And a lot of what I have to say there would also apply in a situation like Montana. If it's going to be legal, if it's going to be regulated, and we need to fight for the best regulations we can get.
The Supreme Court justices discussed when police can enter your home without a warrant on Wednesday. The discussion arose during the court's consideration of the case of Hollis King from Kentucky. Hollis and two of his friends were in his apartment in the fall of 2005. He had some pot and a small amount of cocaine in the room when the police came knocking on his door. The police were in the middle of a nearby undercover operation where the informant purchased crack cocaine from a dealer, then entered the same apartment building where King lived. They did not see which door their informant went into, but they could smell marijuana coming from the door of Hollis King. The officers knocked, but then they said they heard some noises that could indicate that evidence was being destroyed. So they kicked in the door, they found the drugs, and arrested King and his friends. Although he did plead guilty to the charges, the Kentucky Supreme Court threw out the evidence against him, ruling that the police did not have cause to burst into his home without a warrant. The U.S. Constitution normally requires that police need a warrant to come into your house, but the justices decided that a case like Hollis King's, there are exceptions, and one such exception is when police believe that there may be destruction of evidence going on behind a closed door. That's according to some of the justices. Now, the newest member of the Supreme Court, Alina Kagan, said she worries that the court might make it too easy for police to avoid the time and effort of getting a warrant in a wide variety of cases, saying that all officers would need to do is say they could smell pot and say they heard a noise. Yet several justices suggested that as long as the police reasonably suspect something illegal is going on and don't use deception or illegal means to gain entry, the search probably doesn't violate the Constitution. Justice Scalia said that the better response to a knock on the door from police asking to come into your home is to say, quote, "Heck no, you can't come in. Do you have a warrant?" unquote. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg said that instead of knocking on the door of a home with marijuana odor, the smell should be reason enough to get a warrant and come back without warning the people inside. A decision on when police can come through your door uninvited and warrantless is expected by early summer. It was not mentioned in the court on Wednesday, but in the Hollis King case, the police eventually found the suspected drug dealer in the next apartment, but later dropped the charges against him for reasons not explained in court papers.
Oh, what a sad day for the Fourth Amendment here. First of all, just the idea that the smell of pot should be enough for them to go get a warrant. What did that story on Canada where they smelled a skunk in Quebec and they thought it was skunk weed and they went and, you know, burst in the guy's house. So that's, you know, problematic. And then the sound. What is the sound of evidence being destroyed? Well, in the case of drugs, it's usually the flush of a toilet, right? So, if you are on the toilet while the cops knock on your door, don't flush. Leave that little dookie sitting there for them to, you know, to determine that you're not committing a crime, because now the sound of a flushing toilet may be enough for cops to break down your door. Is this the America anyone signed up for? Really? Come on now. The idea that the flush, what other sounds are cops going to manufacture as being destruction of evidence? The sound of a lighter? Ooh, they were lighting the fireplace so that they could destroy evidence. I mean, come on now. We have got to have better protections for privacy in America than this. And it's yet another sad day from this Supreme Court in eviscerating our Fourth Amendment rights.
After that story, I think we better destroy some evidence.
Yes, we are going to be a two-man marijuana incineration crew here during break time. We're doing our part. You do yours. We're back right after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Look, when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Remember, Mr. President, you once were just one bust away from being Barry the drug criminal.
Life ain't a box of chocolates gum. That's why people smoke weed and take bumps and drink way too damn much and get drunk and do it all over again first of the month.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. Brought to you by the John Doe Radio Show in Denver, Colorado. Accurate and informative marijuana reform news and entertainment. Available on the THC Media Network and JohnDoeRadio.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune.
John Doe here with your Groovin' Thursday tune on Normal Show Live. Kurt is also in the studio with us. Those of you that listen to John Doe Radio know Kurt Diamond. Say what up, Kurt.
How's it going, everybody?
That's all you get to say. Thank you very much for joining us here on Groovin' Thursday with Normal Show Live. Head PE on the show today. Let me read from the Head PE Wikipedia. Head PE, an American rock band standing for Head Planet Earth.
Special bulletin from the John Doe Radio Show.
John Doe here with your Groovin' Thursday tune on Normal Show Live. Hope all is well in the Normal Nation. I tried to hit a few oil hits, wax to be exact, before I started up this recording. Not the best idea. I know that. I should know that from Ganja John and Radical Russ Belville's experience, but no, I went ahead and did it anyway. The call of the cannabis got me. Anyway, moving on to the song of the day from Facebook, Chewy. That's where I found this artist, from Facebook. So Facebook becoming more than just that Right On It and Wine network. Born in San Antonio, Texas, Chewy has been rapping for 8 years, so you can hear me. That's what the wax will do with you. He's been rapping for 8 years, influenced by his mother and many great MCs like Jay-Z, Outkast. I guess his mother was a great MC with that. No. She was obviously influenced by his mother and then other great MCs like himself, including Jay-Z, Outkast, UGK, and more. Chewy blends the borders of the underground, backpack hip-hop, and mainstream rap. During the first years of his career, people tried discouraging him by saying music wasn't for him. Like a lot of artists, probably, negativity hasn't slowed him a bit, doing shows opening for Mr. Fab, Rakim, and Rhymefest in L.A. and all over California. The negativity only fueling his fire, Chewy becoming one of the best well-known talents throughout Northern California. Make sure you check out him online. You can find that address by going to stash.normal.org. There you can find all the postings for the songs. I am John Doe. Until we meet again, more hash hits for me, a tune for you. See ya.
It's like 4 in the morning. I just got here. There's no weed. It's crazy. I'm recording in the bathroom.
Please.
Standing on stage like 500 peeps, getting high, and they love the way I rhyme when I speak. I love the way I'm riding on the beat, the same way I'm moving backpacking when I'm riding through the streets. Six niggas deep when we riding in a Jeep with a bong or a blunt, nigga puff puff chief. Puff puff pass with the cuts on blast, fucking up rotation, yeah, dumb fuck ass. So far gone, they be dumb fuck last. How we all roll hard like clutched in gas. Smash, see me on the app, I see you online, niggas ain't about cash. Top notch hoes, give me haze, ring hash. Cushion a bong, burn slow, make it last. Chicks finna shoot. She want a nigga bad. Hump, hump, pass to the left. Ass tag. And you can even ask Black Tag. Burn hit the booth and I'm finna make classics. Hustle hard, never coming in last. Another 2 years and I'm riding in a Jag. Another 20 minutes and I'm picking up Mo. Another dope beat from my nigga J-Lo. Another nigga on the come up like J. Cole. Eyes real low while I'm riding on foes.
Got the weed, break it down. Roll it up, smoke a blunt. Got the weed, break it down. Roll it up, smoke a blunt. Got the weed, break it down, roll it up, smoke a blunt. Got the weed, break it down, roll it up, smoke a blunt. Got the weed, break it down, roll it up, smoke a blunt. Got the weed, break it down, roll it up, smoke a blunt. Got the weed, break it down, roll it up, smoke a blunt. Got the weed, break it down, roll it up, smoke a blunt.
You should already know, like a nigga done told ya. In the ride and I'm picking up Doja. Eyes lower than they usually are, and I'm hoping that the law don't pull a nigga over. Drive on the side of the shoulder. Another sesh, they inviting me over. Break hard, take a right on Folsom. I'm going southbound, hella lit, explosive. West coasting. Been a rolling up a blue for the freestyle. Nigga, get focused. Choking. Baby dog can't handle the draw. Hoping that I ain't noticed, huh? Blunt number 3. My boy got planes full of Kush OG. My girl got green crack by the OZ. When I leave here tonight, I'ma probably OD.
Got the weed, break it down. Roll it up, smoke a blunt. Got the weed, break it down. Roll it up, smoke a blunt. Got the weed, break it down. Roll it up, smoke a blunt. Got the weed, break it down. Roll it up, smoke a blunt. Got the weed, break it down. Roll it up, smoke a blunt. Got the weed. Roll it up, smoke a blunt. Cop the weed, break it down. Roll it up, smoke a blunt. Cop the weed, break it down. Roll it up, smoke a blunt.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod?
Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Have you considered medical marijuana? Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancers, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome, as well as anecdotal evidence suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects of medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reactions, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairment, appetite increase, and in 37 states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana. It's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you.
...76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers. And nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
One of the most disturbing elements of the war on marijuana is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows firsthand the futility of the drug war and reaches out to the community and to current law enforcement to end our war on drugs through legalization. It's time now to speak to one such officer in our continuing look at law enforcement against prohibition.
Welcome back, everyone, and we're pleased to be joined by John Anderson, PhD, a former correctional officer and currently the chair of the Criminology Department at Vancouver Island University, British Columbia, Canada. Dr. Anderson, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
I'm glad to have you here because we have a lot of listeners, Canadian listeners, who tune into the show, and I don't often get a chance to get an expert on who would know a whole bunch about the Canadian criminal justice system. And just reporting on this from the United States, it seems to me that in the past couple of years, we have seen Canada beginning to take on American-style drug war tactics. Can you give our U.S. listeners a basic snapshot of what's happening over the past couple of years in Canada?
Well, I think that your perceptions are, you know, reasonably accurate. Culturally, I think that we've moved in Canada over the past 15 to 20 years from an attitude of tolerance to one that more closely approximates intolerance. And we're seeing that in the way that police resources are expended on things like grow operations and even going after people who are in sole possession of marijuana. Over two-thirds of the police activity in Canada is focused on individual users. So there is a bit of a bureaucracy at work to enforce drug laws that really are unenforceable. If I can go a bit further, I think there's very little evidence that can be presented to, I'd say, the Crown or the prosecutorial and police authorities that are leading the charge here in legislation and in lobbying that will convince them that the approach they're taking is misguided and ultimately costs Canadians far more in human resources and money than in an approach that might be far more tolerant. And by tolerant, you know, sometimes people try and define the policy approach as one of decriminalization. And certainly that's something that our Senate in Canada has recommended twice, one in 1976 and one in once in 2006, to decriminalize marijuana. But if I were, you know, operating an illegal grow op or two, the fact that suddenly marijuana was decriminalized would actually hold the prospect of increasing my profits rather than doing anything about the networks of organized crime that feed off prohibition. So I think what we need is more than decriminalization. What we need is permission for people to grow up to, say, a kilo of marijuana every year for personal use and have that regulated by the government.
It sounds like a good
idea
to me.
Alcohol and tobacco is today. But, you know, just referring back to your original question, I think what we're seeing is a rhetoric that is a little bit more entrenched than it was before. And it's really difficult to have a rational conversation with people who are unlikely to have that rational conversation in a public domain. Because their perceptions of the drug problem are shaped by such vastly different things. So the police talk from their experience. And I'm not saying they're wrong. The police talk from their experience, and they tend to see the drug problems in Canada as being a problem of the drug per se, whereas other people, such as myself, see the problems wrought by prohibitionist policies and
right.
not by the pharmacological properties of the drug itself.
Right. Now, in Canada, yeah. is this attributable to, I mean, we've had the change in government to a more conservative government with Stephen Harper, but is this resonating amongst the people of Canada, or have their attitudes remained as tolerant as I used to think they were?
Well, in my own province, I mean, British Columbia is sometimes called, you know, the wet coast or the left coast, because we tend to hold, I think, more liberal opinions than the rest of Canada on several different social issues, according to the opinion polling that's done. And in this province, fully 60% of British Columbians, when polled, support the outright decriminalization of marijuana, because that's how the question is framed. And I think it's somewhere in your 80% favor the use of medical marijuana. And that's been, certainly been a topic of discussion in the press is, you know, what kinds of regulation, what kinds of access should there be to cannabis for people that require it for medical purposes.
Right. But even in BC, we hear stories. We just did a story on the grow op regulations where the BC Hydro inspectors can come in the home if they detect more kilowatt usage than they think is normal. So even in British Columbia, it seems like you've got some of these regulations that are further restricting people, even the medical growers.
Yeah, you're right. There seems to be a real disconnect between, you know, the consensus or the popular feelings about marijuana versus the government's own policy. What you refer to is a practice of municipalities in British Columbia to, we've got three levels of government, municipal, provincial, and federal. And so the municipal level is taking responsibility for controlling grow-ops by sending in hydro inspectors accompanied by police officers if they feel it's necessary. And, you know, lately we've had some real horror stories about people who have their premises forcibly entered and searched by these inspectors along with police support, and they found absolutely nothing. In fact, there was one high-profile case recently where they found, I believe it was the fellow was had an indoor garden and was raising cucumbers or peppers.
Right.
You know, these are the unintended consequences of an irrational response to people who want to use cannabis. And, you know, that irrationality seems to be something that just is embedded in the conversation about cannabis in Canada and the United States. We're not really starting from the first premises and saying, why is this drug a form of contraband, or why was it made contraband in the first place? And like the United States and Canada, those laws were passed without any debate whatsoever and without any knowledge about the pharmacological properties of marijuana. So now we're stuck with these laws that really serve large bureaucratic interests to enforce.
Mm-hmm.
And our politicians are reluctant to take a stand that's different from the one that's voiced by police groups and by people that want to keep the status quo.
Yeah, absolutely. We're speaking with John Anderson from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, a speaker for LEAP. He's also the chair of the criminology department at Vancouver Island University in British Columbia, Canada. And another aspect that's been revealed now, another tactic they're using in Canada is asset forfeiture. Now, in America, asset forfeiture has a long and sordid history, but it goes back to, you know, our early laws. Is this a new thing, a new act being done in Canada, or do you also have a long history of asset forfeiture?
Well, we do have asset forfeiture in the criminal code, and that's been on the books for a long time. What's different is that the provinces have been using civil forfeiture to seize the assets of people who are who have assets that they don't have income to a legitimate income to cover. And so it's a tort action or a civil action against the property. And it's up to the person who is making a claim on that property to go before the court and argue against this claim and say that it was acquired legitimately. So in some ways, it's a reverse onus clause that means that you're kind of guilty until you're proven innocent.
Mm-hmm.
In BC, this law was tested in the Supreme Court of Canada, and the Supreme Court upheld it. So civil forfeiture may mean for somebody who has a small grow-op in their basement, and by small I mean under 10 plants, that they're going to seize their entire home.
Mm.
And that seems to me a punishment that far, far, far exceeds the crime. In fact, I fail to see where the crime is.
Right, exactly. And on another subject, you know, when folks down here in America think of Canada and cannabis, they think a lot of Mark Emery. And of course, Mark Emery's here in prison in the United States. The website freemark.ca has information on how to contact or protest that. I was wondering what you might have to say about that action by the Canadian government to allow that transfer into the United States.
Well, there's many people, including myself, that feel that it was an injustice. And I think Mark Emery was a lightning rod for the forces in Canada that dislike and are resistant to any kind of alternative voices in the status quo. And he angered a lot of people. Not deliberately, not through any kind of bad thing that he did, but what he did was stand up and quite vocally talk about the same kinds of issues that you and I are talking about now. And he also found some creative loopholes in the criminal code where he could possess in large quantity marijuana seeds, because apparently the law didn't actually cover the seed per se. And so he did quite well, both as an activist and as a businessman. Well, that enraged a lot of people, and I think that when they set up this sting to get him outside of Canada far enough to arrest him, or at least get evidence that he was involved in transporting cannabis across the border, that the government was unsympathetic to any claims that his human rights might have been violated in that action. So, you know, Mark's going to be coming back to Canada after his sentence has been served, and I doubt if he's going to change his message at all. And if anything, the support for the kind of freedom that Mark stands for has been galvanized in British Columbia. And, you know, I mean, one way to not deal with people who are contrarian in your society is to make murders out of their leaders. And I think that inadvertently that's what they may have done. So I know it's not a good time in prison, but I think that you'll look back on that one day and see how it actually drew a lot of sympathy and conversations about this issue into the public.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I'm a monology professor, and a lot of my students come into our program somewhat naive about these issues. But after 4 years, and, you know, they have a lot of things to read about the social construction of crime and how it's not just something that's, you know, passed down on high from Ten Commandments. And they suddenly begin to look at all laws very critically, including things like prostitution and drug use and gambling in a whole different eye. So I think that support for change, or like really meaningful change in our cannabis laws, are going to remain strong. You know, the government is always going to be having to defend the laws and the policies and the practices that it's using to try and stop people from growing and smoking marijuana.
Well put. Well, Dr. John Anderson, PhD from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition and a chair of the Criminology Department at Vancouver Island University in British Columbia, Canada. We thank you for joining us here on Normal Show Live and giving us a look at what's happening north of the border. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Russ. Bye-bye.
If you like what you hear and would like to donate to the cause, send your check or money order to Normal Show Live, 1600 K Street Northwest, Suite 501, Washington, D.C., 20006. Your donation is a tax-deductible gift to the Normal Foundation and will be used to help support this online media. Thank you. You want to legalize it? Call your congressman today. 202-224-3121. It's free, it's easy, and you don't even have to give your name, just your zip code, and they'll hook you up to your congressman. Call 202-224-3121 and tell Congress you support marijuana legalization.
Liberate your mind, liberate your mind.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding and you consent, in most states you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Hoo-ah! Radical rant.
Welcome back, Normalizers. Hey, yesterday we did an alert from Normal's own Paul Armentano about bills in Washington State to improve the medical marijuana law, Senate Bill 5073 and House Bill 1100. And from the from the news report that Paul put out, it sounded pretty good to me. It create dispensaries, and it would define cannabis products, other good little intentions here in the bill. Sounded really great. But then, as I was perusing my comments, I was getting a lot of negative comments about the bill, saying, don't support this. Don't support this. It has all these restrictions and regulations, and it's got a registry, and oh, we'll have to have a, you know, we'll have to sign up with the state, and instead we should support Sensible Washington, the full legalization, the one that removes criminal penalties for marijuana, just completely legalizes marijuana. And I'm left wondering, why is this an either or thing? Why is it that we have to pick just one thing to support? You know, politics doesn't work that way. We can support a bill that's in the legislature that would make things better on the medical side, and we can support an initiative to gather signatures to have people vote on full legalization. Why not work for both? Why does this have to be an either or thing? Both things can be supported. And a lot of this, the opposition to it that I found on my blog had to do with limits on dispensaries, limits on providers, all sorts of problems with some of the wording in here. But I think in focusing on that one particular part, they're missing all of the great things that are contained in these bills to help the medical marijuana patients in this state. And, you know, so many times I hear this is about compassion and it's about medicine, right? And sometimes it's about sacrament, right? And yet to have complaints about it being bad for business, well, that's not what this is about. Legalization is about helping business. But even with that, I went to the actual bill. I looked it up and I've got it linked on the post up there at stash.normal.org. You can read it for yourself. I went to the bill myself and started to read it. And as I read it, I'm like, this is one of the best bills I've ever seen to improve a medical marijuana program to date. Let me get in here some of the things. I'll just read to you what is in this bill, some of the stuff that's coming off in here. First of all, about a registry, right? This is one of the things that the commenter didn't like, is that there would be a state registry. Well, guess what? Every one of the medical marijuana states, except for California and Washington, have a state registry. And the reason why, if you have a state registry, you then have a state card. And once you have a state card, this protects you from arrest. This means not having to go to jail, not having to be searched, not having to have your stuff seized. I mean, that's what we really want. And, you know, registries aren't anti-business. I mean, Colorado has a medical marijuana registry, and yet they've got a booming cannabis business out there. So I don't see how a registration system harms business in any way. Another complaint was, oh, the dispensaries would have to be nonprofits. And if they're nonprofits, you know, 501c3s, that's federal, and they're registering with the federal government. The Fed will come in, and it'll be all federal, and they'll be busted. It doesn't say a thing about 501c3 federal nonprofits. It says state nonprofit. In fact, the line says, licensed dispenser means a nonprofit corporation organized under Chapter 24.03 of RCW, the Washington Code. So that's a Washington nonprofit, not a federal nonprofit. In fact, most of our normal chapters throughout the United States are state nonprofits. They don't go and get a federal nonprofit for that very reason. You don't want to have to deal with the feds. Don't want to get around feds. Now, until we pass legalization, though, we're always going to have some sort of limits, some sort of registration system, because the cops have to be able to separate the patients from the criminals. You and I know it's ridiculous. You and I know there's no criminals. You and I know that marijuana is marijuana, but that's the situation we're in. The situation we're in now is they have to be able to separate the two. And what this would do, by having this card system, this registry card system, it would mean patients with the card would not be, quote, arrested, searched, prosecuted, or subject to other criminal sanctions or civil consequences under state law, or have real or personal property searched, seized, or forfeited pursuant to state law, end quote. Now, it also requires cops to verify whether someone's on the registry as a patient, provider, collective, or dispensary before performing a warrantless arrest, search, or seizure, or before seeking a warrant. And they can only proceed if they have evidence that the patient is out of compliance or committing another crime. So cops have to actually look up the registry before they can come after you. And even if they find you're a patient, they have to have some other reason to be harassing you. This bill would permit, but not require, it would allow them to courts to allow medical cannabis for use for people on probation or parole. That's groundbreaking. We don't have that in, I don't think, any of the other medical marijuana states where a court, if it wants to, under the decision of a judge, could allow someone on probation or parole to use medical marijuana. This bill would create dispensaries that don't charge state sales tax. California doesn't have that. Montana, we just did the story about them wanting to have a 10% sales tax on dispensaries up there. Washington, no sales tax on dispensaries. It would allow people with prior cannabis convictions to run a dispensary. Yeah. Yeah. If you've been busted for growing in the past in places like Oregon and Colorado and other medical marijuana states, you can't get involved in the medical marijuana program in that capacity. You'd be allowed to in the state of Washington. It creates protections for patients seeking organ transplants. We call this the Tim Guerin Clause.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Washington State would explicitly protect you in an organ transplant situation if you're a medical patient.
If this passes, I'm moving over the border.
Yeah, no kidding. And only Arizona has that right now. That's the only medical marijuana state that has that because it's one of the newest laws. It would create protections for patients' right to work. Now, there is a loophole if it's a job that gets federal resources or has some federal requirements, they can get out of it. But generally speaking, a medical marijuana patient couldn't be denied employment because of a P test or be fired or disciplined because of a P test. Again, only Arizona has that kind of protection right now. It would create protection for patients' child custody. That's right. If you're getting in a divorce and you got a spouse that wants to bring up that you're a medical marijuana patient, that could not affect your child custody. That couldn't be used against you. Again, only Arizona has that right now. It would create protections for a patient's right to housing. Same idea as the work, right? If there's a federal thing, they can get out of it. But otherwise, in the state of Washington, you couldn't be denied housing or kicked out of housing because of your medical marijuana use. It would define cannabis products for the first time. These Washington bills, SB 5073 and HB 1100, would define cannabis products and make it so the weight of the products doesn't count against your possession limits. Right? You know, in some states with medical marijuana, if you make your pot brownies, they weigh the entire pan of brownies to determine what the weight that you're possessing is. You know, brownie and all, not just the cannabis. That wouldn't be the case in Washington. Now, I think maybe Colorado has that, but I have to be sure here. It redefines, these bills redefine plant so that multiple stalks on one root ball is still just one plant. Now, I don't grow marijuana. Does that happen a lot? You're growing, you get multiple stalks coming out of one root kind of thing?
Probably should turn my mic on. Not really, but yeah. It can happen.
And yeah. When it does happen, people get busted for having too many plants. So
right.
That would be cool. All right. It removes the requirement that the conditions in the medical marijuana law, quote, be unrelieved by standard treatments or medications. That's in the law right now in Washington. That, like, if you have chronic pain, you have to have tried the other standard treatments and medications first before you can get your medical marijuana card. That goes away. It creates collectives of up to 25 patients that can produce up to 99 plants and have 6 pounds of cannabis on the premises. 25 patient collectives, 99 plants, 6 pounds. It allows patients to change providers at any time. That language isn't actually in the law right yet. And now the patients could have that freedom to change providers. And it retains an affirmative defense if a patient is caught over the limits. If you're caught with over 24 ounces and 15 plants, or if you're a patient slash provider, you know, you're doing both, you get double, you get 48 ounces and 30 plants. If they catch you with more than that, you still have the affirmative defense to say, yeah, I needed more than that for my medical condition. And it only needs to be proved by a preponderance of the evidence, which is a legal standard much easier to clear than beyond a reasonable doubt. It's basically if 51% of the evidence says that it was likely to be medical, then it's medical. It provides a pseudo reciprocity for patients from out of state. Now, it's not that your Oregon, Michigan, New Jersey, Arizona card is going to protect you from arrest, but it will still give you affirmative defense. So patients from out of state caught with medicine could still at least take it to court and say, yes, this was medical, and they'd be protected so long as they were under the Washington limits. It creates a review board to research the effectiveness of the medical marijuana law. It creates a scientific research program into the effectiveness of medicinal cannabis use. It makes Washington State supreme over its towns and municipalities, which means that they can only adopt ordinances that are consistent with these new laws. And what that really means is that the pot-hating towns, the small towns, the places in eastern Washington, wherever you might be talking about, can't ban dispensaries and collectives, unlike California. In fact, these bills even strike the word marijuana all throughout the law and replace it everywhere with the word cannabis. And it even has an explicit paragraph. You know, what I've always been saying, you need a "this doesn't change existing medical marijuana laws" paragraph written in boldface letters. Remember me saying that? Here's their paragraph. "Nothing in this chapter or in the rules adopted to implement it preclude a qualifying patient or designated provider from engaging in the private, unlicensed, non-commercial production, possession, transportation, delivery, or administration of cannabis for medicinal use as authorized under the law." It's a dream come true for Washington patients and for cannabis businesses. You can open dispensaries. You don't have to pay sales tax. You can have collectives of up to 25 patients with 99 plants. Look, don't fear the registry. Don't fear the nonprofit status. Businesses, even the non-cannabis types of businesses, require regulations, licenses, registrations, and inspections. It's just the way the world works. And I'm hoping to hell that these two bills, SB 5073 and HB 1100 in Washington, are allowed to pass. Call your Washington legislators. Tell them to pass SB 5073 and HB 1100. I'm Radical Russ for Cannabis Carry and Ganja John. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you in hour two. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
We love it.
We love the earth.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Dang it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.